L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Weedian House has created a YouTube video on Weedian House investigation. But unfortunately, that a lot of the things that you could see on the YouTube, you can't see it on the auditory. So I'm going to narrate some of the things so you can be able to pay close attention to the essence of the interview. The second thing is, if you want the fuller interview, please check in with Weedian House Investigations on YouTube. You can see the current conversation. Weedian House received alarming information on the nonprofit AIDS Healthcare Foundation and will investigate the matter thoroughly. Our first guest is Carla. Her pronouns are she, they. And she is from?
I actually was born and raised in Los Angeles. I've lived 10 years in the East Side, 10 years in Echo Park before it was trendy, and around 8 years in the San Fernando Valley.
What are your impressions of Los Angeles?
I loved growing up in L.A. I feel like we're the trendsetters here. And I'm not talking about the famous actors and all of that. I'm talking about the low-income folks that really started the trend. I also love how there's so many different cultures here. And it's just been able to open my mind up. I've enjoyed it. I don't think I could ever leave my city. Like, I truly, truly love L.A. and want to make a difference here.
How did you become involved in housing justice?
I think since I was a kid, I was put in the Boys and Girls Club. Boys and Girls Club helps, you know, people in the inner city. And so I was always in different programs that really helped uplift me and helped me throughout different times in my life. So growing up, I wanted to be somebody who helped folks. And I wanted to get into social services.
How did you become involved with the AIDS Healthcare Foundation?
I actually have a background of senior living. I worked as a medical assistant for 6 years. I also worked in the cannabis industry for 2 years. The cannabis industry really opened up my eyes to social justice, just because cannabis has become legal in Los Angeles. And when cannabis became legal in L.A., majority of the stores that were open and had the opportunity to have a weed shop were people who were white. And to me, it just felt like I don't understand why we don't have more people of color. So it started making me dig into public policy. It started making me dig into what the history was. And I started to realize, like, I think I want to go into something even bigger than this. Truly help the community, and that's where I decided to do something in social services and specifically do something in housing.
What is your experience working with AIDS Healthcare Foundation?
I first started a as an outreach worker. So I was the person who would walk around and give people flyers to go get tested. Then I started to get different positions and work my way up. I think the hardest thing working in AIDS Healthcare Foundation is trying to make them understand how important programs like support groups, peer support advocates, case management, how all that is important and plays a role in your health.
Why did you leave the AIDS Healthcare Foundation?
It started to change when I joined the housing division. We didn't have that many employees in the back office, where I would say, I guess, is the admin staff. And we started seeing different things happening, like overdoses, people attempting suicide, seniors who were declining in their health, and they started having signs of dementia. And a lot of these folks didn't have family. So I started calling like different social services to try to see if we can get resources. But the reality, what needed to happen is, even if they were going to get resources, somebody needed to link them, like hand-holding. That's what needed to happen. And the reality is, AHF didn't want to do anything case management. They just said they wanted to be a landlord. So when we would bring up these problems to them, they would say, you know, well, we're just a landlord.
Can you give us an example of this problem?
A good example would be a client that I had. He was a senior. And he was starting to experience signs of dementia. He was also using heroin. But he started losing his stuff so frequently. And I was trying to get him in the process of services, but I was not supported by AHF. So sometimes I would have to buy him food. I would ask the janitor team to help me clean his room, and the janitor team was awesome. Like, they would do it because they cared about people too. But the reality is, I needed a team to really help stabilize people and get them into services. So he eventually died a slow, painful death. And that just really bothered me, because I worked in senior living for 6 years, and I worked with rich Jewish people, right? And the only difference between him and the other seniors is that he didn't have money and he didn't have support.
What was the final straw that made you leave AIDS Healthcare Foundation?
The thing that set me over the edge was when a property manager shared with me a video. That video was a tenant sitting in front of the Madison. That's one of their buildings. Mm-hmm. He's sitting in the chair and he approaches this guy. And I guess that guy owed him something, or I'm not too sure what happened. But then three guys start attacking him and beating him up, punching him, and stomping on his head. Like, you literally see the guys just stomping on his head. He falls off the sidewalk, and a car runs over his arm. And when this video was ending, because it was a security camera where it was being filmed from, the security guards of AIDS Healthcare Foundation was laughing at the whole entire thing. And security had been passing this video for months to each other, because it happened in March. I didn't see this video until the end of May. So I was really pissed off. Like, we're already having problems. There's already issues with security. They think it's funny. And it just bothered me so much, because same type of like police behavior, right? They're a security guard, but it just reminded me of like a cop behavior. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't do it anymore.
This next interview is one of the residents at the King Edward Hotel. His name is Ernest E. Cornish, and here's his story.
Ernest E. Cornish.
Where are you originally from?
I grew up in Binghamton, New York, which is upstate New York.
What brought you to Los Angeles?
Film industry. Well, this year I've been on 18 different projects.
Wow.
TV, movies, specials. I've been on Top Chef. Wow. Kids Say the Darndest Thing, season 2 with Tiffany Haddish. I've been on A La Carte, was my last series that I just finished for the All Black channel. Mm-hmm. That's going to premiere in January, which I'm very excited for. And I was on All Mankind, and several other several other movies, you know, different low budget stuff usually.
What got you into filmmaking?
I worked at Disney and I wanted to get into camera work. And I went back to school for photography, actually. And while I was in school at the Art Institute of Pittsburgh, I found myself hating photography. I didn't like the classes. I didn't like the school. And I ended up leaving an 11-year job at Disney to go back to college. And when I went back to college, I decided I was going to go into film in the film industry because Full Sail University was in my backyard. And it was an incredible school, great school. I loved everything about it. So 20 months of hell, but it was good.
What has been the most rewarding thing about working in film?
The most rewarding thing is meeting all the people that I meet. I love meeting people. Even at Disney, I met a lot of stars. But since I've been out here, I've got to work with some great names and great people. And they are. They're just amazing actresses and actors that are just, you know, top-notch. And they have great personalities on and off screen. And it's just wonderful to work with them.
What is your experience of being in-house?
During school, I actually left my apartment and lived in my car for 20 months because I couldn't afford school and an apartment. So I had to move to my car. And then when I moved out here, I didn't have a car. Mm-hmm. And I had a friend that was going to meet me at the airport, pick me up, and she never showed. For a year, I never heard from her. So I ended up 3 weeks, it was almost 4 weeks, on the streets. And I would sleep on the train to Santa Monica. I figured that was the safest one. And I would go to sleep during the day, and I'd stay up all night with you know, homeless people that showed me the ropes. I thought it was amazing, the community here, because they literally protect their own. And I was literally shown how to stay safe, how to take a shower, how to get meals. And they literally took me by the hand and showed me how to do this on a day-to-day basis. And during the day, I would spend most of my time doing resumes because I needed a job. That was my biggest thing.
What was your first night like being unhoused?
Well, my first night here, I ended up staying at the LA Mission. And that was the worst experience of my life.
Why?
Well, you had to be there by 4 o'clock. I had all of my luggage with me. So I didn't have just one bag. I had a huge suitcase. I had a duffel bag. I had my overnight bag. I had my camera equipment. So I had a lot of stuff with me. Well, they yelled and screamed at me for hours that they couldn't check all this stuff in. And I said, look, I just got off an airplane, and I need a room for the night. Mm-hmm. So they finally compromised, let me stay. And then it was so structured that it was almost like military being in there. It was like you had to go to church, you had to go to meal, then you had to go to bed. And then at 4 a.m. they woke you up. And it was like, now you're dressed and go get your stuff, get out. You know, and it's like, okay. It's like, and I never went back. That was my one and only night there. But I had $150 in my pocket, so I ended up going to a hostelette up in Hollywood. And I was able to stay there for a few days because I had my boarding pass. Okay. I didn't have a boarding pass going back, so they wouldn't let me stay the entire time my money ran out. Mm-hmm. So I ended up back on the street again. But at least I knew people at that point, and I knew where to stay safe.
How did you end up at the King Edward Hotel?
I was at the Russ Hotel. I spent 90 days in a HOPRA program for HIV and AIDS. And I did my 90 days, and at the end of my 90 days, they're supposed to help me get what I needed to go on to Section 8 or whatever and move out. Well, they didn't help me very much, and I didn't have my license yet, and I still needed my birth certificate and all that kind of stuff from New York. Right. And it was just a big process after process, so I ended up back on the street. It was about another month before I moved here. And then my case manager at AHF, because I'm a patient of theirs, actually told me that AHF was taking over the building, and that they had room here at, well, I was at the Madison. That's where I was going to go.
Okay.
Which is over on 7th Street. And they told me they had a room there for me to head there. Mm-hmm. Well, I went on my way there, they called me and said that room was taken. So I was like, okay, well, now what, you know? So then they called me back a few hours later and said they had the room here available. So I ended up moving in into the room here in 103, where I spent the last 3 years before I upgraded to this one.
How did you deal with day-to-day with your illness?
I was diagnosed on my birthday in 2013. It was definitely a birthday present, but it was a relief in a way because I was sick for 2 years prior.
Oh, wow.
I went to 11 different GI doctors and 17 other doctors, specialists, that could not find out what was going on with me. And then once I went back to my primary, that's when I found out, you know, we ran the blood work and we found out I had HIV. Well, I had full-blown AIDS at that point because my CD4 count was 8. And they were confused why I was still around, you know, because it was like, you know, I could have caught anything and it would have killed me.
No, my goodness.
And then, of course, they started me on meds immediately. And then I lost the rest of my family members at that point. Mm-hmm. I lost a lot of family members when I came out in 93 as a gay man.
Oh, okay.
And then I lost the rest of them when I was positive, when I tested positive, because they didn't want to deal with me and they didn't want to, you know, they don't want my nieces and nephews around me and all that kind of stuff. So they're afraid that I pass it on to them. Living at the King Edward Hotel is an absolute nightmare. We have so many issues, and it began with electric, because the electric, I wouldn't be able to cook a hot dog. It'd take me an hour to cook a hot dog in the microwave because every 20 seconds you had to go up to the fifth floor and hit the breaker and turn it back on, come back down, turn the microwave back on, and then do all that over again about 16 times before your hot dog's done. Mm-hmm. They stopped pest control. So most people had tons of roaches everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We had rats roaming the hallways. Big rats. They weren't, the size of my cat. You know, I was like, they're huge.
Mm-hmm.
And now, they brought pest control back, but it's only on as need basis.
Mm-hmm.
But now we have bed bug infestations that they're not treating properly. Recently, I found out one of my friends upstairs, Erica, has a huge mold infestation. I mean, it is sad, really sad, the mold that she has to live with. Her whole entire bathroom ceiling is completely covered with mold. And then her living room is now starting to, I call them living room, but it's starting to move into that area, and it's just really, really bad. But they don't care. It's like when you complain, it does nothing. It does no good. I mean, I've filled out so many complaint forms since 2019 that I never hear if they're resolved or not resolved, because they never let you know. Other than my hot water, I go weeks without hot water, and then they tell me, "Oh, you have hot water," and I'm like, "Come up and feel it." Mm-hmm. You know, you don't believe me? Come up and feel my hot water. But they, you know, they want to contradict me, but that's what they do. So,
obviously management has met your and residents' concerns. Has you faced any retaliation?
Yeah. So in 2019, I started protesting. In 2020, I majorly protested because I had the time. The film industry was closed down, and I had nothing to do other than protest. And I was on Sunset Boulevard at their headquarters across the street, and I protested most of the year, and most of this year as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then any chance that I got, I would move to out of the closet. I would move to the Healthy Housing headquarters just to let them know, yay, I'm still here. and I'm still going to make your life miserable until you do something. Because the law states you have to provide these amenities. Mm-hmm. And they don't think that they're, you know, they don't have to answer to the law. Mm-hmm. On the 6th, at the end of the business day on the 6th, I received a civil harassment restraining order from Mr. Mark Dyer. Mm-hmm. Mark Dyer is the supervisor of management. They oversee all the management here. He does. And his complaint was that he didn't give me his phone number and that I wasn't allowed to contact him. And my feeling was, I've been in management for 34 years, and if you didn't get your level of response, you kept going up the ladder until you did. Well, he's the top of the food chain, sorry. You don't like to answer your phone, then don't answer your phone. But at the end of the day, you're still the supervisor and manager. That case was dismissed. Right that same week, I was given a letter by AHF telling me to remove all my social media posts regarding Dominic Eastman, who is the regional manager, Mark Dyer, again, the supervisor of management, and Liliana Zodai, who is HR department. Mm-hmm. February 5th, my best friend passed away in this building. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how he died. I thought their neglect had definitely killed him, because he had put in complaint form after complaint form for over a year on a resident that lived above him that was making so much noise during the day and night that he couldn't sleep. And he was in a lot of pain. He was in a lot of agony. The last weekend that I saw him alive, he was in so much pain and so much distress. Sorry.
It's okay.
That he just literally, it was like at his end of his rope. So when they found him Friday morning, the week after that I saw him, was again, they estimated he passed away on Wednesday. They found him on Friday. And when they found him, I felt that they were neglect. It was totally their neglect. If they had done something to resolve the issues where he could sleep or where he could get some kind of relief, he would still be here today. And he ended up turning to street drugs, and fentanyl killed him. But he didn't have to turn to street drugs. They could have done the right thing. They could have solved the situation. Instead, they just neglectedly didn't do their job. So I went to social media. I called them a killer. I called them murderers. And again, at the time, I didn't see anything wrong with it, because at the time, that's exactly what they were. In my eyes, each and every one of them that neglected his request, neglected his complaints, then they're liable. They're 100% liable. Well, they wanted me to remove them. I was working 14-hour days. They wanted me to go through 2 years worth of posts to remove them while I was working 14-hour days, and they gave me less than 24 hours to do it. I didn't meet their goal. And on the 12th, they served me at noon with defamation paperwork. And all of this, to me, is nothing but retaliation. And now I've been served with another restraining order with their security guard, because, again, they don't want to do their job, and when I complain about it, I'm the bad person, you know. And then they use words against me, you know. I made a general comment. I had just finished a marathon of John Wick. I love the movies. I think they're cool. But anyways, I just finished a marathon, and I was down in the lobby, and I was telling them that I needed them to do something. And then I turned and got in the elevator, and I said, you know, if to get anything done around here, you need to hire a hitman. And the door shut, and I didn't think nothing of it. Well, now they're using that against me. And they're saying I threatened him. I didn't threaten him. I made a general statement that they took and turned it to whatever they wanted. Because, again, they want me out. They tried to settle. They tried to settle with me to get me out. They offered me $12,000 in less than 30 days to move out during COVID. It's like, I can't. I haven't been able to find anywhere to live yet. But as soon as I do, that's where I'll be heading, is to a new place. But the thing is until I do, it will be on my terms. You know, I'm not going to settle for not having a voice. And the fact that, you know, they want me on the street. It's like, sorry, I'm not going to the street just because you want me on the street. You know, I want you to be held accountable for your actions, and I want you to be held accountable on the law. And then the law, Civil Code 1941.3, states that a tenant has the right to hot water on the tenant's own control. It doesn't say intermittent, because Michael Urey, property manager, would tell you that it's an old building and you'll have hot water intermittently. And it's like, no, that's not what the law says. The law states that you have hot water under your control. But, you know, again, they don't want to do the right thing. They don't want to put the money in these buildings. They don't want to fix them the way they need to be fixed.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/TheShot to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.